This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. We are back. It's Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. And I want to say I guess I missed you guys. I mean, it's been a while since we were just in a regular
podcast. We ride again.
Yeah. Like, is it just me or has it been just a series of replacements or trade deadline analysis? We just haven't had a good old-fashioned podcast.
We haven't.
For a while, you know?
The three amigos are back.
It's good to be back.
Yeah.
It's good to have you back, man.
Good to see you, boys.
How's the old pink eye situation at home? Because we talked about it last week, so we want to make sure that we update people.
There's a bit of leftover eye crust, but we're hoping to have her back in the lineup in time for the playoffs.
Excellent.
So
it's
going to be good. Ken and I were together on the weekend watching the Penguins-Leafs live, and we were debating till the cows came home about a collision that happened between Brian Dumoulin, who's never going to score a goal that pretty again.
Exactly.
And Frederik Andersen. He was pushed by Ron Hainsey. Dumoulin was. So just quickly, I wanted to get your thoughts because it just cracks me up every time anyone tries to have a goalie interference debate because it's so perfectly split, 50-50 every time. What do you think?
Well, that's the problem, right? Nobody knows what's goalie interference anymore. Nobody knows. And I don't know. Mike Sullivan doesn't know. I don't think anybody knows exactly what goalie interference is anymore. And again, this all goes back to video replay, and it became a problem once it was reviewable. And it goes back to what I've said for a long time, is that I could live without video replay in anything but did the puck go over the red line? Mm-hmm. Did it go in the net? Because that goal by Dumoulin 2 years ago, that was a goal 100 times out of 100. Like, that was a goal. That was a goal. Yeah,
Even a year ago, I feel like.
And now it's not, for whatever reason. And I don't know. I mean, they've got it. I don't know how they're going to fix it, but they've got to fix it. And I don't think they're going to be able to fix it before the playoffs.
Yeah. I like the old adage. I believe it was a referee who said, you know, in avoiding the goalie, pretend he was a pit of snakes. And if you're the forward, you try to avoid it like it was a pit. Did you try to avoid it like it was a pit of snakes?
Like the forward is Indiana Jones.
Exactly. Yeah, and I agree with you, Ken. I think video replay is just like thrown a wrench into everything. And you know, I mean, we watch these sports. It's fun. The unexpected happens. I think the NHL has the best refs in the world. I mean, we've seen double IHF events, so we know this to be true. I think you have to give the refs a little bit of leeway on this. I mean, they've been calling the game for years. They have tons of experience. I think you have to let them have these calls. I don't think video replay has helped at all. It's just muddied the waters. And again, like if a guy gets pushed in, then, I mean, that's on the defenseman.
See, but to me, there's a real flaw in this whole system, okay? So if Dumoulin had been pushed in by Hainsey and or whatever, and there had just the goal had just been waved off, there had been no penalty, right? They could review it,
right?
And they could go back and say, okay, maybe it wasn't, maybe it was, whatever. But because he received a minor penalty on the play, there's no review,
right?
So if I'm a referee, if I don't want to get shown up,
call a penalty.
I just call a penalty every time.
Totally. Yeah.
Just call a penalty every time.
That's right. That's right. Because that's what
call a penalty every time, and then it's like, well, we can't review it. And you can't make me look like an idiot, and I can't look like an idiot because I called a penalty.
Yeah, then there's nothing to I mean, Crosby even said it after the game in the Pens room that the problem they had with it was that, oh, we couldn't challenge it. But, I mean, it does take that element of control away from the team.
So just call a penalty every time.
If in doubt, it's not a bad idea. Yeah. It was Alex Ovechkin at the All-Star game. I was talking to him, and he said his proposed system was little tap, no, it's goal, it's in. And big takeout goalie, it's no goal. That was his.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Little tap.
Like just a little, like, just incidental contact. He's like, no.
You're going,
that's a goal.
You're going a little too deep on the Russian accent. There. But, okay.
Someday I have to tell a story on the podcast about when I became a professional voice actor for like 2 days, but I just got scammed out of $300 and that was it.
Oh.
I'll tell that story. Maybe in the summer when it's a slow news day.
True story, bro. Brad Marchand, the weird collision with Anthony Duclair. I mean, do you give Marchand the benefit of the doubt, or do you have to do the exact opposite because of his history? Do you think it was intentional? Was it just a bizarre, awkward accident?
Well, what do you think? You know what I like? Actually, I've taken a lot of pot shots at the Department of Player Safety. And but in this case, I have to give them props for being able to somehow look at this incident in a vacuum and look at it for what it was, not for who was involved. Because for me, it's like, how do you not say, yeah, but it's Brad Marchand, How can, you know, because like the day before that game, he was fined for embellishment.
Yeah.
So how do you believe a guy who's fined for embellishment the day before? Yeah, really. Right? So he says it was accidental. It kind of looks accidental.
It looked like it was self-preservation. Yeah, like he was trying to avoid knee on knee.
Although, like, you know, I mean, does everybody defer to clotheslining a guy when they're trying to jump out of the way? I don't know. Maybe they do. I don't know. But to me, I was pretty impressed with the fact that they were able to compartmentalize that and say, okay, look, we can't see that it's Marchand. We have to see this as it is, and it looks like an accident, and it was an accident, and it was an honest play, and so we're going to judge it that way. And I actually think that's a pretty good way to do it.
Yeah. It reminded me of – this happened to Radko Gudas not long ago in Philadelphia too, trying to avoid contact and ended up making things much, much worse. And the same thing with Radko Gudas. You're sort of like, how many times must this happen? But then it's like, no, it was just a weird, weird play. And yeah. I think when I saw that with Brad Marchand, it's like, that's just a weird play.
I'm actually blogging about this later today, and I'll give part of it away. I said,
or yesterday.
Spoiler alert.
Or yesterday. Depending on when you're listening to this.
But one of the things I said was, you can't suspend Brad Marchand because he's got the most punchable face in the NHL.
It's almost like Marchand doesn't have clean. He only has dirty and less dirty. It's like the Sixers line. Like, I don't feel pride. It's somewhere between pride and shame. Less shame? Yeah. And Marchand is like, well, I can't do something dirty to Duclair, but all I can do is less dirty. Clothesline. Looking at the standings right now, things are getting a little weird. I feel like this year is one of the strangest years I can remember. I mean, the Leafs are completely locked in. They cannot catch Boston, realistically. They cannot be caught by Florida, realistically. They have really no motivation to do much to play Austin Matthews right now. And in the West, Nashville is really starting to distance itself from the pack as well. It started pulling the San Antonio Spurs, Greg Popovich move, resting some starters. And I'm wondering if decisions like those are symptomatic of the playoff format itself. And is it a reason to consider maybe a 1-16? Because let's say if Nashville was in a 1-16, would they have more motivation to keep playing everybody?
Yeah.
Like more control, more possible permutations of who you might play? I'm not sure.
Well, I think the Nashville thing is just a product of the fact that they have too many guys that can play, right?
Right. Yeah.
Kyle Turris, I mean, people were saying, you know, oh, well, he's not a healthy scratch. It's a rest maintenance day. No, he was available to play. He wasn't in the lineup. He's a healthy
he
scratch.
Was healthy
I'm
and
sorry.
Scratch.
$6 million. That's a healthy scratch. But I think that the playoff format needs to be changed, not because of this, but because of the fact that Pittsburgh and Columbus played in the first round last year, and we will likely, if everything sort of goes according to form, we're going to have Winnipeg and Nashville in the second round this year, and one of those teams is going to be out in the second round, and I don't think that's fair. I would prefer to see a 1-16 based on that, and I think there's been a lot of criticism of, you know, the playoff format the way it is and how it really it's not fair to a lot of teams sometimes. And I think that's more of an impetus for changing it than something like this.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not worried too much about stars getting rested. I see the parallels with the NBA, but hockey rosters are almost twice as big as NBA rosters. So if you don't get to see one player, you know, like if you wanted to see the Leafs on the road and Matthews isn't in the lineup, you still get to see Nylander and Marner. But I would agree. And I don't think it's a nefarious thing with the NHL. I think it's just they try things and they go with them for a couple of years. And then there's a groundswell for change. And it makes for a way to keep things fresh. And I would like to see 1-16. Obviously, there's travel concerns. But you know, that happens eventually
yeah.
anyways. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't matter if you kind of invert the process. I think we get some really fun matchups. And, of course, it gives the best teams motivation to win all the way through.
Right.
And I think a good example of that is, like, the Leafs right now, for example, I think are sixth overall in points.
They are.
And for all we know, Matthews might be almost ready to go back into the lineup, but they're obviously, they have no reason to rush him. But mm-hmm. if you're sixth in a 1-16 format, top eight get home ice. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the Leafs would be fighting to hold on to a top right. eight spot to get home ice in the first round. So that's just one example of why I think it would increase motivation for teams.
Based on winning percentages today, if the season was to end today, a 1-16 would be Tampa Bay versus Florida, Nashville versus Anaheim, Boston versus LA, Vegas versus Philadelphia, Winnipeg versus Colorado, Toronto versus Dallas, Minnesota versus San Jose, and of course Washington against Pittsburgh.
Come on! Why? And it's funny because nobody more pissed off about that format than Barry Trotz. Like, every time we talk Barry Trotz, it somehow comes up in conversation. Oh man, that's awesome. The Carolina Hurricanes made a pretty interesting decision last week by canning Ron Francis. Sorry, they didn't can him. They promoted him.
Speaking of can, I just opened my can of time.
You're waiting on that
fired
one.
Up.
Yeah, he but Ron Francis was promoted into a new role. But we know, I mean, he's the greatest player in their franchise history, so they cannot insult him by firing him. But he obviously, from everything we've heard so far, will not be making hockey decisions anymore.
He's not showing up to the office. He's done. Yeah. He's done, guys.
Yeah,
he's done.
I think you're right.
He's done. He's done. He won't be making any hockey decisions. He won't be showing up at the office. This is what they call something called gardening leave. That's what this is called.
Oh.
Yeah. Like when you continue to get paid through your contract, but it's like you're told to stay away. That's what this is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And do you think the decision from the ownership, Tom Dundon. Dundon? Never said his name.
Dundon.
I think Law and Order.
Yeah.
Dundon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Do you think, can we make a case that it was a merit-based decision because Ron Francis never made a player-for-player trade? Obviously, the Scott Darling signing was a disaster.
Yeah.
And it's not a hindsight 2020 disaster. I mean, a lot of us said it was a bad signing from day one.
Yeah.
Or do you think this is a matter of, no, it didn't matter. We can try and claim it was merit-based, but no, Dundon just wanted Francis out no matter what. What do you think? Do you think he actually deserved to lose his job mid-season?
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. Mm. And I mean, I wouldn't have been jumping up and down if he had kept his job either. But, I mean, he had almost five years, you know? In the NHL now, that's way too long.
Right.
That's way too long. Mm-hmm. Turnarounds and rebuilds are done in 2 or 3 years now, you know? And teams have done it. They've gone from, you know, hopelessly out of the playoffs to being a Stanley Cup contender, and they do it a lot more quickly than Ron Francis ever did it. I mean, Ron Francis made some great moves. Getting Teuvo Teravainen, fantastic move. Mm-hmm. You know, drafting Sebastian Aho in the second round, great move. You know, really good that they've built that defense core. They've built a really potentially good defense core that's really vastly underwhelmed this season and underachieved. But I mean, it's a results-based business, guys, and the results weren't there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, Tom Dundon walks into this thing and goes, we're playing at 71% capacity again for the 800th year in a row. We got more empty seats than any other team in the NHL. You know, something's got to be done. And I think he probably looked at that and went, okay, we got a coach here who's really good. Okay, we got a coach here who's really good. So if I keep the GM and give him, you know, carte blanche over personnel decisions, he fires this coach maybe, and then I got a GM that I'm not real crazy about. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think you can really fault the Hurricanes or Tom Dundon for doing this. I mean, he's done a good job, but it wasn't good enough. Mm. It wasn't good enough. He didn't get a goaltender. He started with Eddie Lack. He swung and missed on Eddie Lack. He swung and missed on Scott Darling. And now they're sitting there with a 37-year-old Cam Ward who's got to play 60 games. Yeah. I mean, he can't do that. I mean, Cam Ward is gonna re-sign probably with Carolina because they have no other options at the moment.
And can you imagine telling a Hurricanes fan that last year that, oh, you guys are going to need to re-sign Cam Ward?
Like, no, are you kidding me?
They would lose their minds.
Yeah.
I think if you look at the Hurricanes, you know, and I've said this about a couple of teams, they're structurally inefficient right now in that they don't have a number one center. They don't have that big dominating center either mm-hmm. in terms of size and skill or just speed and skill. And they don't have an option coming. Maybe Martin Nehtish can be a very good second liner. I feel like it's putting a lot on a kid like that to say he could be a number one center in the NHL.
And that's like 3 years from now.
And that's like three years from now. Yeah. I mean, maybe he comes over next year and plays in your top nine. That's cool. But he's not going to be Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel, Austin Matthews, or anything like that. So what you have is they overpaid Victor Rask on a long-term deal.
Yeah.
And you overpaid Scott Darling on a long-term deal. So those are two big black marks there, because not only did you not fill the need, but for a team that, you know, was not a cap ceiling team, they're spending money that, you know, it's sort of like they had a small pie and they sliced off big squares.
You don't
squares
you don't
when they
have the luxury. You're right. You don't have the luxury to overpay guys.
Exactly. You have to make smart decisions.
You can do that in a lot of places. Bury the guy in the minors, take the $900,000, right. You know, whatever relief on the cap, but you can't do that there because it's real money.
Yes.
And it's not just fun money. It's real money.
Yeah. Right. And there was right. good decisions made. Jacob Slavin, great contract there. But the problem you come to when you're Ron Francis in year five is you're not in the playoffs yet, and you're not rebuilding. You're on your way up, but you're getting to the point where some of those good contracts and some of those entry-level deals that are helping you out right now are going to expire soon. So what happens when those kids go from making $900,000 a year to $5 million a year, or if they're really good, even more than that? You're going to run into those problems, and not only that, but eventually Jeff Skinner is going to be an unrestricted free agent, and what keeps him in Carolina? He's been a good soldier.
That's yeah, funny. I mean, all he does is sit there and deal with trade rumors all the time.
Yeah, year after year.
They're trading Jeff Skinner. Yeah. Trading. Yeah.
And it's interesting. I interviewed Ron Francis about a month ago before the trade deadline, and now it's really telling when I look back on what he said. And I think there is a failure on his part to recognize and acknowledge a team surplus. And I said to him, are you going to consider looking for a center? And you have this, you know, you have that great defense core, Nashville East. I love that term you gave them, Ryan. And you still have Jake Bean coming up and Hayden Fleury breaking into the NHL. And you look at Anaheim, Bob Murray takes Sammy Vatanen and he trades him to get Adam Henrique. He fills a hole at forward. Henrique's been a really nice fit in Anaheim. Whereas Francis almost got, I don't want to say mad, but he was really firm when I spoke to him on the phone. He said, I'm not going to mortgage my future. But like you said, Ken, eventually you have to, because you have to take your shot when your group of young players reach that critical mass. Mm-hmm. But Francis just dug his heels in and even said to me, well, Sebastian Aho might be able to play center. And he mentioned Marty Nehtish, I can't pronounce his name Nehtish. Properly, as their potential option center. And it seemed like he wasn't interested in making that trade. So I can see what you guys are saying. I still wonder why it had to happen mid-season. To me, it's kind of a firing you make in early June before the draft, but I don't know.
But maybe he doesn't want Ron Francis running the draft. Maybe he wants to have a guy in place that's going to have his.
Oh yeah, pre-draft.
You know,
I mean, but I mean more like, you know, mid-season felt.
But I think this is a precursor of things to come. Like I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't hold any ill will towards any of these people, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of a blowout there with some of the scouts and probably some of the, you know, the training staff, those sorts of things. Because that seems to be the way these things happen.
You clean house.
Yeah.
Mm. Install your own people, yeah.
And I'm going to early front runner, Ken Holland.
Ooh.
Wow. I'm just throwing that out there. Because Ken Holland wants to be a GM still. He does not want to get kicked upstairs in Detroit. He wants to be the GM of the Detroit Red Wings. And if he's not going to be the GM of the Detroit Red Wings, he's going to want to be a GM somewhere else.
And do you think he's going to get removed from that role? Because to me, he's only had two shots at a rebuild. I feel like he's got leash left. He's only been a rebuilder for 2 years.
He may very well. And you know, I mean, this is a moot point if he re-signs an extension, but he hasn't yet. And, you know, I'm just kind of throwing it out there to kind of stir things up.
I like it. I want to stick on the topic of GMs because we've had a lot of questions. And I mean, especially about Garth Snow. I get asked, I don't know about you guys, but by far more questions about Garth Snow than anything else. I don't know if it's one guy or millions of people asking the same question. It's always, why does Garth Snow still have a job? That's usually the wording.
Mike from Uniondale, you're on the line.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm curious what you guys think. I mean, the Islanders look like they're going to miss the playoffs again, barring a miraculous run. And why does Gar Snow have so much leash? And what does he have to do to get fired?
And
he's
it's
been
kinda,
there for, is it 12 years now?
Man. And it's kind of strange because...
Well, when did he stop playing hockey?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
It was 3 weeks after that.
Yeah, yeah. He was a GM the next day. And it's kind of funny because you think, oh, yeah, he's got pictures of the owner, you know, doing something, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not even the same owner. It's new owners now.
Yeah.
You know, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of a big groundswell of, you know, Gar Snow's getting fired this summer. He may very well. I mean, I think if this Tavares thing goes south.
That's it.
And he can't re-sign
yeah.
John Tavares, which is not really even in his control.
Yeah.
Because the Islanders have made it very clear. They're going to give Tavares all the money he wants and all the term he wants.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all they can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? That's all they can do yeah. is that. And I still think that there's a very good chance Tavares will sign somewhere else. And if that happens, I think you have to really wonder if he's going to stay in that job. Not because he lost Tavares, but I think, in my opinion, because at the trade deadline, he was like, nope, not even going to listen to offers for him. Not even going to listen.
Yeah.
Mm. Nope. I don't care. I don't care what you're going to give me. I'm not listening to offers for John Tavares. That, to me, that's a huge indictment.
Yeah.
And I would say that if Tavares leaves, you know, it's not going to be about money or a term, but you can still point the finger at Snow and say, you didn't build mm-hmm. a team mm-hmm. around him that was enticing enough to make him stay.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's important. I think, you know, bringing in Doug Wade as coach is a good move. We're not, you know, we haven't quite seen the results, but it's early. You got to give a coach, I think you got to give a coach at least 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, Bednar's proved that this year.
Exactly. Tortorella last year,
yeah,
too.
They were -112 goal differential last year, Colorado.
Jesus.
And they're plus 13 this year.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyways, that's, yeah. I digress.
Yeah. So I think, and it's interesting too, when you talk about the ownership change, I have spoken to people before that talk about this phenomenon where new owners will come in and a GM or a president or whatever it might be, they can make the case that they need a little more time because they can go to these new folks and say, look, I know things aren't looking too well right now, but we had some bad luck. We had some injuries, even if it's not true. And, you know, I can turn this around. Just give me another year or two. And if you're new coming in and you don't have as much experience in that field, you don't have that sort of prejudice against
yep.
that GM, you might say, okay, well, let's see what can happen here. Look at Joe Sakic in Colorado. Again, you know, we talked about Bednar doing a great job coaching,
yeah.
but look at Sakic. We were hammering on Sakic for years about his job in Colorado, but then he pulled off a masterful trade in the Matt Duchene deal.
Mm-hmm.
So all and so that really felt like, oh man, if we gave Joe Sakic enough time, he could turn things around in Colorado.
Yeah, but couldn't anybody? Like, couldn't anybody turn things around in a good amount of time?
I mean, and Snow's had two different eras.
Yeah.
Like if someone
but
came
you get
in,
continuity.
If someone came in, they could turn it around in 2 years.
But you get I could. Give it to my dad. He can take care of it.
Yeah, you get continuity if you keep the person that's already there. I'm not saying it's the best business strategy, but it is a business strategy.
And the Islanders, they seem to have real systemic problems with the way they've handled their prospects over the years. They have this strange push and pull. Josh Hosang, I think, is the perfect example. It's like they wait, almost too long for him to make the team. They finally promote him. He makes one little mistake, he's demoted again. And it's just that back and forth. And they spent so many years blocking their kids from even cracking the lineup, like Ryan Pulak, who's got that monster shot, finally getting a chance this year. But he probably should have been in the league last year. But you sign a Dennis Seidenberg on a one-year deal.
Right.
The year before that, you signed Marek Zidlicky and at forward. You know, they hand big money to Andrew Ladd, Jason Chimera. I know it's worked out for Barzal.
And Beauvillier to a lesser extent.
Yeah, but a lot of Islander prospects end up these mixed up kids that are just up, down, and they're afraid to make mistakes. I think Hosang is the example that sticks out to me the most. And then you have Michael Dalcol, who's just rotting in the minors, and I don't know if he's ever going to become.
Often with them, there's an up down funk.
I'm not going to touch that
one. Well done.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Well done.
I just don't know what Snow.
Thanks. Try the veal.
But I don't know. I mean, maybe it is the new ownership and refreshed, you know, shortened memory over what Snow's done wrong in the past. But it doesn't feel like anything's going to happen. Like at this point, I'm still going to be surprised if he loses his job.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Yeah. But and same goes for Mark Bergevin, who is now endorsed by Jeff Molson as of this week, right?
That's the kiss of death lots of times.
Oh, goodness. So do you believe the endorsement? Do you really think Bergevin's going to be there at the draft, still Montreal's GM this summer?
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of do.
Oh, boy. It seems like
I had a dream last week that I was in the Montreal Canadiens office with John Liu of TSN. And Bergevin walked in and Jeff Molson fired him and we both heard it. And we were both trying to tweet it, but it was one of those dreams where, you know, you're trying to do something and you can't do anything. And I couldn't do anything. I couldn't type or anything. And John Liu was going to get this out before me. And I was swearing at him because it was like, we're supposed to do this, break this right at the same time. Anyways.
Ken, that wasn't a dream. That happened yesterday.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think about Bergevin? To me, it's like if you're keeping Bergevin, you're remaining in denial as a franchise and you're saying, we're not ready to rebuild. No, we're going to take another kick at this can. We just need to retool. Don't worry about it. If you fire Bergevin, you're saying, no, we're willing to undo all of our mistakes. You know, signing Alsner, trading away Sergachev. We're going to go back to our roots and draft kids and try to build around kids. So it's just a matter of philosophy.
Yep.
But to me, it seems like Montreal is going to stay in denial.
And this is, again, a situation where obviously Mark Bergevin and Jeff Molson have a very good dialogue between the two of them and they have a good relationship where Bergevin can say, look, I know we're in a hole now, but I'm the one that can get us out of this. I know Shea Weber is under contract for, you know, 8 more years, and I know we don't have a number one center, and, you know, Carey Price is usually our only hope, and sometimes he gets hurt and our season goes down the toilet, but only I, not Tom Fitzgerald, Paul Fenton, Bill Guerin, any other number of assistant GM out there of high caliber who, you know, have Stanley Cup rings or, you know, have gone to the final. You know, only I can save the day. And apparently, Molson's okay with that right now.
See, that's kind of like the Gilligan's Island thing, though, eh? Like, he gets them into all kinds of trouble, and then he gets them out, and he looks like a hero. Like, he wouldn't have had to do all that stuff if he hadn't gotten him into the pickle in the first place.
Is he front office Jay Bobeister?
Yeah, I think so. I think he might be.
Your greatest nemesis.
So what about Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton? There's another one that I feel like people are debating constantly on social media, whether he gets another shot. I mean, he went heavy. He went 2012 LA Kings, surrounded McDavid with not speed. So do you give him a chance to dig his way out of that hole, or do you decide, no, we need to clean house and make some major changes?
Well, again, I mean, it's the same thing with Ron Francis. If they did it, how could you ever fault them if they decided to fire Peter Chiarelli? Right. I mean, that team, you look at that team and every shortcoming it has is because of the way the roster was constructed and who constructed the roster. You know,
at least with Edmonton, I feel that there's an easier path to success, which is, you know, and salary cap, obviously a consideration, but you need a really good number two goalie because obviously Cam Talbot was playing too much and it caught up with him this year. He had 1 year where he played, I think, maybe more minutes than anybody else in the NHL, that being last year, and he was awesome. Clearly that caught up with him. So you get somebody who can give you 30, 35 games that you have confidence in, maybe a veteran. Brian Elliott? I know that's going to sound horrible if you're an Oilers fan, but Brian Elliott, when he's not the guy...
Yes, please, says Calgary fans.
Yeah. Brian Elliott, when he's not the guy, is really good, or at least pretty good. You need more speed. You need fewer big bodies. You already traded Patrick Maroon, one of your big body guys. Lucic, I don't know. You can't probably do much about that at this point. But
aside from buy him out if you...
I guess you could buy him out. You know, Kyler Yamamoto's on the way. You know, maybe you can find a free agent with speed and all of a sudden the roster looks a little better. You got some defensemen that are coming up. And you have Connor McDavid. So you have a pretty low bar to clear in order to get into the playoffs because McDavid can do a lot for you, especially with Leon Draisaitl in tow.
Is this a playoff team with Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle in the lineup? I think that's a question you have to ask yourself.
I mean, it probably
is. Do the Oilers
is.
Make the playoffs if they have those two players in their lineup this year? I would argue, Yeah, there's a pretty good chance. Yeah.
I think there's a pretty good chance, too.
Yeah.
Especially because Oscar Clefbaum fell off a cliff this year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting, too. I mean, it does show just how important goaltending really is. I mean, Carolina and Edmonton, two of the better possession teams in the league. But, I mean, Carolina, it was a problem last year as well. But Edmonton, biggest change is goaltending went from Cam Talbot was fourth in Vezina Trophy voting last year. His game falls off a cliff this year. And then Carolina goaltending stayed bad. And if either of those teams had good goaltending, you'd be very much like the Leafs, who get outplayed often but just keep winning games because Frederick Anderson's like, I got this, guys.
Yeah.
So there you go. Let's get to a few reader questions while we have time here. This is from Ville Peninen. A Finn.
So Ville Peltonen?
I think it's Ville Peltonen under an alias. No, it's me, Ville Peltonen.
Yeah, should Ville Peltonen be in the Hall of Fame? Is that the question?
I think we know which way Ville is going to lean on this based on this question, okay? Did Toronto make a mistake by drafting Austin Matthews instead of Patrick Laine? Matthews is great, but Laine is already in a form of Rocket Richard winner.
I looked at that question. I went, yeah, right. And then I thought about it. It's like, that's actually not as crazy a question as you might think of when you see it
clickbait anymore.
Yeah.
Listen bait.
So I think it's a legitimate question. And I think the answer is no, they did not make a mistake picking Austin Matthews. He's been a huge reason behind the turnaround in Toronto. And I think that time will prove that Austin Matthews is going to be the better, more complete player. I think with goal scorers, it's feast or famine lots of times. And once it starts to go, it goes real fast. Mm-hmm. He's a winger. And so whereas Austin Matthews, like he'll be a stud for 15 years, you know, and even at the point in his career when maybe things start to erode a little bit, like the offense or whatever, he'll just do other things. And whereas I think with Patrick Laine, once he's not able to score, he's not going to be very useful.
Yeah. This might be an odd metaphor, but I've always said that like Patrick Laine is a bullet. Austin Matthews is a gun.
Yeah, that's a good one.
A bullet doesn't do much without a gun, but a gun without a bullet, at least you can smash people in the face with it. Right. And not that Austin Matthews smashes people in the face, but it's a metaphor.
Yeah.
And for the Leafs in particular, this actually worked out perfect for both squads because the Leafs needed that dominant number one center.
Yeah.
They got him. Because of Austin Matthews, William Nylander and Mitch Marner work better in that lineup. Whereas with Winnipeg, they had that number one center in Mark Scheifele.
They needed
that dynamic trigger man, and they got it in Laine. So both teams are looking great right now, and their rosters are fully flushed out, at least up front. Toronto could obviously add another defenseman, but they got what they needed. So it's awesome that Laine could win the Rocket Richard trophy. And I think with Austin Matthews, he's probably going to get some more hardware as his career goes on as well. But I would still take Matthews over Laine.
And for Jets fans who are probably angered by this, we want to make it clear. Laine is unbelievable. He's probably going to be a generational goal scorer. He's going to take the torch from Ovechkin. He's doing it right now. They're tied in goals. I think Laine is going to be a 500-goal scorer. He's going to have multiple 50-goal seasons, I believe. So Laine is extremely special, and it's not a knock on Laine just to say that Matthews is a bit better.
Sure.
But the thing about Matthews is, even if we're just talking goals, the NHL leader in even-strength goals since Matthews' career started, at least as of last week, was Matthews. Right. Matthews had more, I think it was 8 goals more than the closest guy, but Matthews doesn't get a ton of power play time yet in his career.
So imagine when he
starts playing, like if Matthews is playing as much as Alexander Barkov, if Matthews is playing 22 minutes a game, his numbers would be exploding, right? So in terms of just straight-up even-strength efficiency, even though Matthews is the better two-way guy, he's also just a really good and underrated goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is almost the Crosby Ovechkin.
It's very similar.
And even what they do
on the ice is similar. I mean, I think they might each be a poor man's version of Crosby and Ovechkin, respectively.
Right. Not a destitute man's, just
no,
a,
just like a
man. Not even
like
a poor man's,
upper
like
middle
like
class,
just a less, yeah,
a
just
working
a,
class,
upper
yeah,
middle
yeah,
class,
yeah.
Yeah. But I think you're totally right. I was going to say the same thing. It's Crosby does more. Crosby has his one with the cups, and he does more things on the ice. He can be converted into a two-way player, whereas Ovechkin, we know what he is. He's been always amazing at doing one thing, and I think that's going to be what Laine is too. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No. Especially when you're doing it 50 times a year.
That's right. We're gonna stick with the Finns. We're gonna talk about Pekka Rinne this time. This is from Hockey Puck Hockey Puck Latino. Just not a Twitter handle I was expecting to read.
Yeah.
Asks, is Pekka Rinne getting into the conversation for the Vezina Trophy this year?
I would definitely say he is. And, you know, I'm working on a story for our playoff preview about Nashville. And you look at some of his competition, and they're fading a little down the stretch. Andre Vasilevsky in Tampa Bay was, I would say, the favorite in the first half of the season, but heavy workload, and it's starting to wear on him. Whereas, you know, I saw a really good stat on Twitter. I believe it was from the Ineffective Math feed. Looking at 5-on-5 save percentage, Pekka Rinne is literally in a category on his own right now.
Wow.
Okay. I want to say it's like 939. There's Pekka Rinne, and then there's a bunch of empty space, and then there's everybody else, the Vasilevskis and the Carey Prices and everyone else there. So, I mean, right now, you look at how good Nashville is, and a big reason is the play of Pekka Rinne. And, I mean, I don't see what else he needs to do at this point. He's been awesome. His numbers are great, and he's going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I definitely think he will be. I mean, we don't – that's one of the ones we don't vote for. The GMs vote for the Vezina. So, I mean, it's you can't sit there and say, yeah, he's on my ballot, because we don't have a ballot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in light of everything – Ryan pointed out, and the fact that they're winning, and they're you know, they might, you know, they could, they'll probably, they may win the President's Trophy, they may not. Yeah, I don't mm-hmm. know. I mean, and he's picking up wins. He's been very good, and I think he's really, like, rebounded from the playoffs last year. I mean, in the final, there were times when he was really suspect.
Oh, that's being generous. He on the road in the final. Yeah, he was atrocious.
Yeah, he was atrocious. Yeah,
yeah, and that's what's fascinating about this year is he even his entire career home road splits, he's always been significantly better at home. This year he's completely reversed it, and he's still been good at home, but he's been amazing on the road, which to me is a sign. I don't know if you call it emotional growth, what you want to call it, and and I know, I mean, obviously Rinne's got the best defense in the league playing in front of him, but I don't think he gets enough credit for how well he works with that defense, because he's such a good puck handler, and he's so good at stopping pucks and turning things around and getting that team moving up the ice quickly. It's like he's got a telekinesis with those defensemen. They work so well together, which is very cool. Let's get one more in. This is from Ryan DeLong. Are the Jets as good if they don't sign Steve Mason to push Connor Hellebuyck in net? Okay, I guess I'll lead with this one, because the answer is not even my own. It's Blake Wheeler. I spoke to Wheeler at the start of the year because I was skeptical, and I even expressed that to him. And he was adamant. He said, you know, and he kind of called that Hellebuyck. He said, you know, we had a young guy who wasn't ready, and we have a veteran coming in with a lot of experience, and I think that just having him there, either he's going to play well or he's going to push the other, and that's going to yield a better goaltender. And I didn't know if that was just kind of hockey talk intangibles, but we do see the results on the ice. I don't know whether it's circumstantial or not, but it's hard to argue. I mean, Hellebuyck had an amazing breakout season.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like hockey talk to me.
Yeah.
It does. And, but I mean, there's, you know, how do you prove it, right?
Yeah.
How do you prove it? I think Connor Hellebuyck was ready to make that leap. Mm. And I don't know that, you know, anybody would be, you know, crapping their proverbial pants at the beginning of the year thinking Steve Mason's pushing me, because, you know, like,
burn.
Let's say, yeah, no, but
Mason,
I mean,
burn.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I think Hellebuyck was going to come into his own anyways. I mean, this is a guy who was and is a quality goaltender, regardless of what happened last year. I mean, he almost single-handedly won a bronze medal for the U.S. in the World Championships a few years back. You know, this guy, his credentials are good. He's a good goalie. You know, the team has played a lot better in front of him. And so I think he was ready to make that step. I don't know that, you know, I don't know that having that guy, because haven't we sort of talked about the fact that sometimes it's counterproductive to have that kind of a situation for a goalie, because he's always looking over his shoulder and all those things. Like, haven't you mentioned that in the past?
I
think, yeah.
The one thing I'll say, though, is the money talks, and at the beginning of the season, I mean, this is Connor Hellebuyck's RFA season, and they gave Steve Mason $4.1 million. That's not backup money. That's starter money.
Yeah.
So to me, that there wasn't a platoon. The message was almost, Steve Mason is our starter.
Yeah.
And then he gave up 78 goals against the Leafs the first game of the year. Yeah. I was like, oh, well, never mind.
Yeah.
So I think that sent the message right away. The fact that it was McDavid, Hellebuck, O'Connor. That's why I'm like, we're talking about McDavid. But it was his contract year, and Mason was earning a lot of money.
And I think that, you know, he must have had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder with the Mason signing, and it proved to be helpful. Yeah. But I mean, sports psychology. I've said it before. It's such a funny thing where it's basically lying to others and yourself, right? And so, you know, when you say to a guy like, "Oh, you know, are you looking past playing Buffalo tonight?" Like, "Oh no, they got a really good team over there." It's like, well, if they're a really good team, who's a bad team? Like, objectively, if they're, you know, last in the conference, somebody has to be bad.
I'm not even thinking about my contract.
Yeah, there's actually a great passage in one of our books, Blood Feuds, where we had a chapter that was the Battle of Alberta, and Lanny McDonald was talking about his time with Calgary playing Edmonton, and he said, the reporters would always ask us, "Oh, does this game mean more to you than other ones on the schedule?" And we would always say, "Oh no, it's just another game," but secretly, it was a big deal. Yeah. We always cared. We always looked it up on the schedule. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, with goaltenders, where it's like, no, it's good to have these guys in the roster. But secretly, it's like, no, I want to be the best. I want to be the guy in the crease. And I'm going to prove that I should be there. And Hellebuck's done it. And the Jets are better off because of it.
Good. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And be sure to check out on bookshelves Ryan Kennedy's book, The Art of Lying to Yourself and Others.
Bit of a clunky title, but it's really great.
It's like, it's sports psychology.
We're workshopping it.
Yeah,
we're workshopping it.
Okay, everybody, we'll see you next week.